listening to the Forza Podcast with your host, Marsh.
Welcome on in. Special edition emergency National Signing Day episode of the Forza Podcast. I know we were talking to you guys last night, but some things happened in the past few hours for the Hurricanes, and so we got to talk about it. As always, I'm Marsh Thomas, your host, and then I am always joined by my guy, Jordan Nelson. Jordan, it has been a crazy day.
It has been a crazy day, and I am pumped, man. This is amazing.
Amazing, yeah. So if you didn't, if you're living under a rock, or if you are just, if you're just not paying attention, Avante Williams, one of arguably the best safety in the 2020 recruiting class. Many thought he was going to Florida. I thought he was going to Florida. Everyone else thought he was going to Florida. Chooses the Miami Hurricanes, and we are going to get all into that, and we have a guest today. We have Gabby Urrutia from the State of the U and the Storm Surge podcast, so let's get him on. He was at UM today, so let's bring him on the podcast.
Okay, bringing him on right now. Hello?
What's going on, boys?
What's going on, Gabby? How are you, man?
Chilling, bro, chilling, man. It's been a great day.
Dude, it has been a very long day. I'm sure you are just... Yeah, I'm sure you're just done and exhausted, but we got Gabby Urrutia, my boy from the State of the U and from the Storm Surge podcast. So Gabby, let's get into it, man. Avante Williams, you know, arguably the best safety in the 2020 class. Everyone thought he was going to Florida. I mean, I thought he was going to Florida, and then he chooses Miami, and you were at the University of Miami today. You were at the presser. What's the vibe right now with Avante's decision?
Yeah, no, I think it was all around just a great day. I'm not sure if Miami even really expected to get his signature. The way that Manny Diaz kind of made it sound was that, like, he felt that he was kind of a Hurricane. Like, he said he felt that Avante, like, in his heart was a Miami Hurricane, but he just, you know, he wasn't sure, of course. And then they found out with the rest of us when, like, the quote unquote facts, because I don't think they actually, I think they stopped using the fax machine a couple years ago, came in. And yeah, he was really, really excited about it. I mean, and he credited Banda, and I think he deserves a lot of credit just for building that really like a really long standing relationship. I actually just posted the article probably like 15 minutes ago on State of the U that you guys can go check out about Banda and that 4-year relationship and everything that's kind of gone on, and just how important that. Just that relationship, that constant willingness to recruit him despite the decommitment, despite him committing to Oregon, and just throughout that whole process, just sticking with him and making sure that relationship was solid, and how that eventually paid off for Miami in probably the greatest way imaginable.
That's awesome. So you were there at the presser today, where we heard from Manny, we heard from Rhett Lashley, we heard from Ed Reed, we heard from some of the new players. With us beating out the Florida Gators for Avante Williams, like, what vibe were you getting on the overall state of the program? I mean, is it significant in terms of the momentum we're building? Or, I mean, you tell us, because you were there.
Yeah, I just think the consensus is that this has obviously been a very, very great, like, a very productive offseason, and it just seems like Miami just keeps putting one foot in front of the other, and, you know, they're not really taking any steps back, but it kind of felt that way last offseason too. But at least to me personally, I don't know if it's like a time thing that, like, I'm dealing with it now, so it just feels better. But I feel like this offseason feels a little bit better, if not, like, significantly better than last offseason, just because, you know, last offseason was kind of like tape, but still there was still, like, no real tape on tape. But, like, now we got King, and, you know, he has 50 career touchdowns, and he has, like, a record for, like, most consecutive games with, like, a passing and a rushing touchdown. And it's just, like, there's a lot of, like, concrete things that are just going well that seem to be piling on top of, like, one on top of the other. So I feel like, yeah, I feel like there's definitely a sense that things are trending in the right direction. And as we all know, Manny's gonna say the right things. He's always gonna say the right things. And, you know, he obviously did that today. He definitely won the presser today. he did a good job of just talking about how he already feels like the culture's better, how it's already improved through the weight room, and how, you know, these transfers have come in and bought in because they've seen our players, and, you know, that all that's real, and all that is real, you know, like everything that they do here, the culture that they have established here so far is real, and that people see that when they come in. Like, you can't, like, you can fake it in a, he was saying you could fake it in a press conference, you know, coaches are going to say the right things, but, you know, the players are going to know when they come to visit, like through the host and all that, they're going to sense that fakeness, and they're not getting that. They're seeing that this is genuinely the way that things are here at Miami, and they're buying in. Like, clearly they're buying in with the addition of King and Roche and Avante Williams and a bunch of the other guys that we were able to get into this class. So yeah, I would definitely say that there's a very strong sense around the program that they feel like they're getting to the point that they could potentially turn this around.
Absolutely, absolutely. And then, you know, going back to Avante Williams, Gabby, do you see him as a guy who can, I mean, he's top 10 players in the state of Florida for the 2020 class. Like I said, one of the best safeties, if not the best safety in this class. And do you see him as a guy who could come in and play and contribute as a true freshman?
Oh, yeah, I absolutely. And I say that just because we know that the struggles in the secondary aren't, like, you know, it's no secret that we really need some help there. I believe it or not, and this is nothing that, like, I've really heard, I just feel like based on his size and based on, like, his athletic ability, that I feel like he could really, really help right away, maybe from, like, the slot position, just because, like, you know, this, I feel like safety, I feel like they're pretty comfortable with Amari Carter, Gervin Hall, you know, we're going to get Bubba Bolden back there, and he's done a very, very good job. Like, we saw how he really kind of started to find his footing there right before he unfortunately messed up his ankle. And so I feel like the safety position is gonna be really solid. I feel like, you know, the outside corners are gonna be like a year older with Blades and Ivy, and I feel like Bandy really left a hole at, like, as, like, kind of like the slot guy. And I think Avante Williams is just naturally talented enough to come in and be one of those players, and you're seeing that so often in football these days. I mean, I'm not trying to compare him to Tyrann Mathieu, but you're seeing how Tyrann Mathieu is playing safety, and he's playing outside corner, and he's playing slot corner, and he plays a little bit of, you know, he does a bit of everything, and he's certainly not 6'5 like Isaiah Simmons, but you're starting to kind of see these more like hybrid players kind of take shape within the game of college football and even into the NFL. So I feel like, especially early on, I could see Avante Williams helping potentially in that way. And then you are pretty deep at safety. You got those guys. I mean, Keontra Smith is going to have a leg up on him. Just another really talented kid from Dade County that they really like. But, you know, he's been in the defense for a whole year. And Avante's probably not going to get here till summer. So he's going to be playing. He's definitely going to be playing catch up. So I feel like that might be a role for him to really shine. And if not on special teams, we've seen how freshmen have come in here and excelled on special teams. We saw with Christian Williams last year, Corey Couch really started to come in his own on special teams. So I think he's definitely going to have a role there, and I think he'll do extremely well.
That'd be huge if we get some help, you know, at slot corner, like you're saying. I would love that if Avante Williams could come in and help there right away. So I'd like to get your thoughts on hearing Ed Reed speak in his first official kind of capacity on the Miami Hurricanes staff. What did you think of what Ed Reed had to say?
Yeah, that was a surreal moment, as you can imagine. Just like, I mean, that was the first time I had ever seen Ed Reed in person, like not even like passing by, like from a distance, I'd ever seen Ed Reed. So just like, he's just one of those people, like, you just felt his presence. Like, Ed Reed was there, and like I you just felt it, and it was crazy. And like, I asked him a question about just like Avante Williams, because he coached him at the Under Armour game, and like, I feel like my heart was beating so fast. I was like, man, I'm asking an NFL legend, like a Hall of Famer, like not even like a Miami Hurricanes legend, like forget that, like this guy's like an actual like living, breathing legend. And
all players.
Yeah man. And what I mostly got out of him, and what I got out of his conversation, is that he's really like, he's genuinely not there to like be like play like dictator, you know. He's not going to be firing anybody. He's not there to breathe down Manny's neck. He's honestly not even going to be there every day. Like, this isn't like a 7 day a week job for him. Like, he said that he's a father first, and his son lives in Georgia. His 11-year-old son lives in Georgia, and you know, he's not going to be at Miami every single day, but he's going to be mostly serve as just kind of like an asset to Manny Diaz, a guy that can evaluate talent, that could point out, hey, like, you know, I'm seeing this in practice. He's a guy that can go wrap his arm around around a player in the secondary, a linebacker, an offensive lineman, anybody, and just kind of be that type of father figure for somebody. And he spoke about that so much, about just building these kids' character for life. Like, not even just for football, just like helping like these college men grow into like adult working men. Like he said, not all of them are going to make it to the NFL. His goal is to just build men. And like that really took me back. I think it really put the whole thing into perspective for me, because, you know, Ed Reed, he does so much charity. He does so much like he volunteers so much of his time. He has like his own charity, like his own organizations that he does. And so much of his time is devoted to that. And he really wants to bring that attitude of just like really helping these guys grow, not only as football players, but as mature growing men into like the real world. And I thought that was really great. I think that's the type of maturity and the type of leadership and the type of just the kind of conversations that I think that this locker room has been lacking. You know, like they kind of, you know, they're going out and partying, they're going out this, and he's going to be he literally said it, like, if us, like an average Joe, are out at a bar and you see a Miami Hurricane player like out, like, tell them to go home. Tell them that they need to go home. They're not in a place right now where they need to be partying. When they become successful and they do what they need to take care of, then there's a lot of there's much more time for them to be doing that stuff. Like, right now is not the time to be doing that. Right now is the time for them to be growing, to be flourishing, and to building this football team and themselves up into better people and better persons for everyone. Not only for themselves, but for the person next to them. So, I mean, I was really, really blown away by his conversation and just by everything he was kind of talking about. I thought his perspective was very, very refreshing. And I thought it was something that could really, like, truly benefit this program. Like, maybe not from a football standpoint, but just from a maturity and from a standpoint of just the way that these kids approach life and the game of football.
Absolutely. I mean, when I was watching, I mean, you could just tell that he just has a vibe, like a positive vibe about him that has honest and just like a sense that he's been there before. He knows what he knows what he's getting himself into. And he just seemed very calm and collective. And I mean, because you covered the Canes last year. You and I were at fall camp. You covered last year's spring camp and throughout the regular season. Describe the difference in just the environment and the feeling from the end of the 2019 season, last time you were at the Heck Center, to today.
Man, I would say that there's definitely a renewed sense of positivity. The last time I were there, I mean, obviously Miami had lost to FIU, Miami had lost to Duke, and you know, there wasn't a lot of people feeling too great about anything at that point. You know, Dan Enos was coming into pressers. I mean, he obviously wasn't thrilled with the way the offense was performing, and you kind of had to work through that, like knowing that you kind of had to tiptoe your way around things because you weren't going to try to get, like, you know, you didn't want to piss the guy off, you know, like, but there was also legitimate questions that needed to be had. And it felt like reporters were asking questions, but like, you know, like that obviously that wasn't what they want to hear. Like, you know, you can kind of, you just got that sense that everyone kind of knew what was going on, and by everyone asking questions and stuff, it wasn't really making it better. It was just kind of like, it just felt like a darker place. And then today, I walked in there, and you know, I'd never seen that many people inside the Mann Auditorium. I mean, where they hold the press conferences and all that stuff. There was a ton of media, a ton of cameras, like a bunch of people that were there, and everyone kind of felt that positivity. You know, no one was really going back on that. No one was really like reminiscing on the, like, everything that had happened. They might mention it just to talk about how much different it is, you know? So I would think that there's definitely a renewed sense of positivity and optimism that definitely wasn't there towards the latter part of the 2019 season.
That's awesome. I'm so excited, man. I can't even, I feel like, just piggybacking on what you said, I think the main difference between this year and last offseason and this offseason, and you kind of brought this up earlier, is last offseason we were banking on, you know, Tate Martell and Dan Enos, who were mostly we were banking on their intangibles, like not factual things that they had done, but what could be, right? Because it was Alabama's quarterback coach, and it was, you know, the former five-star QB or highly ranked four-star. Whereas this offseason, we've loaded up with people that have a proven track record that have had elite production at a college level. I mean, what were your thoughts about Rhett Lashley speaking about elite production? I mean, did that get you pumped about the offense going forward?
Yeah, it definitely did. And you know what my favorite thing about Rhett Lashley speaking is, like, just how, like just the way he, like, speaks about it, you can tell that it's, like, so natural, you know? Like, you can tell, like, it's not forced. He's not trying to, like, hype anybody up. You can just tell that, like, this is a guy that knows what he's doing with offense. He could speak, like, when he speaks, like, you can just tell that he's so knowledgeable about it that it doesn't come off as, like, he's trying to sell you. Like, it didn't feel like he was trying to sell you on his offense. He didn't seem like he was trying to sell anybody, oh, this is what could happen. He's like, this is what we do. Like, this is literally just what we do. Like, yeah. We run 100 plays a game. Do you want to run 70 plays a game, or do you want to run 109 plays a game? That's, like, literally an example he casually brought up today. It was just, like, running over 100 plays as if it was something that was going to happen often. Like, not saying it could happen often. Like, literally speaking as if this is just the norm. So that's something that I got from Rhett Lashley today that just, like, really, really, like, jacked me up, that he didn't seem like a guy that, like Danny knows. And, again, like, Dan Enos was a guy, like you mentioned, Jordan, that it was more of what he could be. I mean, he coached Tua and Jalen Hurts, two guys that I guess in hindsight probably would have been good with or without him. Obviously were good with or without him. So he hadn't really done the play calling, and, you know, like, it was still exciting because of the title and what could have been. But this is, like, a guy that's proven it time and time again at Auburn under an offensive mind in Gus Malzahn. Did it again under Sonny Dykes. And he, like, asked him a question about working with, like, Gus Malzahn and Sonny Dykes and finally working for, like, a defensive guy. Like, this is going to be his offense. And he kind of reverted back and he was like, no, like, Sonny Dykes let me do my thing. Like, Sonny Dykes could easily have told Rhett Lashley, hey, look, this is something I want to do with the offense. And him as an offensive guy was just like, Rhett, you know what? This is yours. This is what what the offense is going to be, what you want it to be. And the fact that he trusted Rhett Lashley, deferred to him as an offensive guy, also spoke to me that, like, this guy just flat out knows what he's doing. So I really, really like Rhett Lashley. He seems like a very genuine guy. It seems like the offense he runs is going to be just crazy efficient, especially with a quarterback that already knows the spread. And I think that that's such a huge factor in all this, whether it's Derek King or not. Like, just having a guy that's run the offense and it not being brand new to somebody in that room, I think is going to be, I think it's really, really important for the development of the whole entire unit.
Dude, you're hyping me up, bro. I can't wait to get down to Green Tree and watch a few practices with you here in the spring. And and today Manny announced that spring practice will start February 29th. One thing that kind of jumped out to me, there was a lot more injuries and guys that'll be missing out spring ball than I anticipated. And I have two questions for you. One, Brevin Jordan, I mean, he kind of has – his injuries are kind of catching up to him. Should we be a little more concerned about him? And then also, how long do you think Bubba Bolden will be out for?
Yeah, with Brevin, I feel like – honestly, I feel like he's kind of reached, like, that status, at least in the college football world, where they're kind of going to take care of him. You know, like, they're not too worried about him being out there and re-aggravating anything because they kind of know what they got in him. They know they have one of the best tight ends in the country in Brevin Jordan. And I think with him, it's going to be more about, like, obviously fixing that ankle. If it's not – it's obviously not 100%. And also, it's important to note that, you know, these aren't – like, the list is – are guys that – are either not participating at all or just not going to be available on the first day. So Brevin, I'm sure he'll participate at some point because I don't think the ankle is, like, devastatingly bad. But I think that they're really just taking care of him to make sure that that thing's, like, fully good to go so that they don't lose their star tight end for another basically half of a season. Bubba Bolden, I just think with the, like, an ankle break like that, like, how it's old, I'm pretty sure, yeah, he broke it, right? I mean, it was so long ago, I feel like I can't even remember. Yeah, so, I mean, I feel like that's something you just got to take care of him. He did not rule out Bubba Bolden for the whole spring. I don't remember him ruling out Bubba Bolden for the whole spring. So, I mean, I'm not sure. I guess that's something – that's a question that we're probably going to have to get answered, like, as spring ball goes on. I imagine that they're also going to be very cautious with him because, like, again, like, they already kind of know what they got in him just because of what he proved towards the end parts of his short stint at Miami so far. Yeah, I think that's a I think that's kind of the deal with those guys. What concerned me more was just it's a lot of freshmen that are missing significant time. I mean, I saw like Tyreek Austin-Cave, Corey Flagg, Don Chaney, Michael Redding. I mean, that's not something you want to see, especially with the two linebackers, just because that's a position that's going to be real thin. And I was kind of hoping that Bradley Jennings was going to be back, but I'm pretty sure Bradley Jennings is probably going to miss the whole spring again. And that was someone that was really making strides towards the end of spring as a guy that they saw could potentially play a lot. And then he suffered that injury at Traz Powell, and that was kind of that for him, and he hasn't played since. So I just got increasingly more worried about the linebacker position, and I was already really, really worried about that position. Yeah. So that's definitely going to be something to look at moving forward in these next couple of weeks, months, whatever it's going to be, before spring ball and then into spring practice.
That was going to be my next question, was about the linebacking core. So who I think we can safely pencil in Zach McLeod as one of the two starters there. Who are you thinking is who's projecting is the starter next to him? I mean, is it Wayman Steed? Is it the Huff kid, Avery Huff? Who are we looking at with Jennings and Brooks and other players out for the spring?
I mean, I thought that it would have been Sam Brooks, but I mean, I didn't even mention Sam Brooks before. He's another guy. We got four linebackers that are just not able to go. I think that there's a real big question mark there, and that's like not me. I'm not trying to even like over exaggerate it. Like I truly mean that there's I truly believe that there's a big question mark there, and I think it's clearly a big problem. I'm assuming based on the depth chart, I mean, a linebacker, those are really the two guys we got, like at least in the inside linebacker spots. Like, I don't really know what their I don't know what their plan is. I think the only guy that I can think of that is available at that other outside linebacker spot would be Ryan Rigoni, at least for spring. I don't see that lasting all the way through fall and by the time season starts, but when spring practice starts, I could see that. I could potentially see Patrick Joyner kind of coming back up and playing that linebacker spot that Mike Pinckney kind of held. They're going to have to get pretty creative there, because I'm really not sure what they're going to do with that spot. I mean, then with the striker, I think you still have you could always look at like Amari Carter. You could always get like more of like a stand up, like kind of 3-4 outside linebacker, like maybe like a Jalen Phillips could fill in there if he's healthy, if he's ready to go. With just Greg Russo and Quincy Roche, it feels like those are going to be kind of the two dogs off the edge. So I think that Jalen Phillips could be a very, very unique guy at that position. I think there's a couple of different directions, and I'm honestly interested to see how it plays out, because I honestly couldn't tell you for the life of me right now.
That's interesting. As of now, I'm pretty worried about it after you talk. You know, I didn't really think about it before that, but that is concerning to have such a big hole at such an important position.
Yeah, it definitely is. It definitely is. Just if it weren't for all these injuries, it wouldn't be too bad, because like, these are the times, like this is why you early enroll. So Tyreek Austin-Cave can get reps. So Corey Flagg can get reps. So Sam Brooks could finally play some first team reps at that position, like consistently. And like the fact that these guys are going to be out, it really doesn't help. It really doesn't help with McLeod being the only true, like, I guess, experienced linebacker out of the whole group.
Thank goodness, McLeod came back, right?
Yeah. No, if he didn't, there would be like I didn't care what we did with the offense. I mean, we would have had to score 45 points a game, because I don't know what the hell they would have done at that linebacker spot to stop anybody.
So I want to ask you about one of the big bombshells from that press conference was De'Eriq King saying that his goal is to go 12-0. I mean, what was that like? Did it cause some buzz in the room, or? I mean, how was that?
I didn't really like, I wasn't thrown off by the comment. Like, in my opinion, like, especially in situations like this where it's like the opening presser and you know you're going to get questions like that, like he's going to be confident. Like, this is a confident guy that comes in with a high standard for himself and the way that he works. And it's not even not only what he does on the field, but all the things he does off of it, and just like how he leads and like the work ethic that he has. So he's gonna come in like saying, hey, I expect to win every game. Like, he's like, that's pretty much saying like, oh, I expect to win every single game that I play in. So yeah, saying going 12-0 is obviously, it just sounds different than just like having that confidence like, oh, I expect to win every game. But yeah, I mean, he's a confident guy, and I wouldn't want it any other way, and I believe he means that. I believe everybody means that, is what kind of what I'm getting to. Like, nobody's gonna go in there and say, you know what, I'm really aiming at 8-4. You get me? Like, he displayed the confidence that I would expect him to display. You know, I do not expect him to go 12-0. I don't think anybody actually expects him to go 12-0. But as a quarterback and as a leader and as a guy that's really making his presence felt here at Miami with the resume that he has, I love that he feels that way. I love that he feels confident to go out and say that he's going to go 12-0, and wherever that takes us, that's where it takes us. Like, you know, if it takes us to Clemson, you know, you go play Clemson at 12-0. If it goes, takes you wherever it is, you know, you kind of go from there. But him displaying that confidence was him just checking off another box in the prototypical quarterback for what this program needs right now.
Yeah, he definitely has that that mentality that we've been missing, man. And so one last question for you, Gabby. So with Willie Moyse not signing today, you know, it's been said that we have another roster spot and we're probably going to use it on someone in the transfer portal. Have you heard of anyone specific? I know that Tariq Black, the receiver from Michigan, is someone that Miami has contacted. Is there anyone else that you've heard of, or, you know, you think Miami should go after within the transfer portal?
I haven't heard many names specifically like you, Marsh. I've heard a lot about Tariq Black. The thing about Tariq Black is that he still has to graduate from Michigan before he can transfer. So we're not like, even if he was, if he were to come to Miami, it wouldn't be until the summer. And the fact that they didn't fill that spot, that they didn't, whether it's they didn't take Moyse's signature, or if they're just kind of keeping that open, kind of tells me that they're in the market for somebody like that. That's going to be able to like, whether it's Tariq Black or someone else of that nature that's just dealing with the same situation of having to graduate in, I guess, after the spring or even early in the summer, and then kind of going through the process of finding a school. I could definitely see them holding that spot, holding on to that scholarship so that they could potentially go after Tariq Black or anyone else's name that eventually comes up, because it always happens. You know, Tariq Black is a hot name now, mm-hmm. but after spring, someone's going to graduate and decide, hey, you know what? I have a year to do this. Let's see what I can find. And, you know, there's always names that come out really late in the process. And I wouldn't be surprised if Tariq Black or another skill position, I think that would be a good position to go after. Hell, at this point, a linebacker sounds really good after this conversation. Maybe try to find some linebacker after the spring or whatever it is that wants to test the waters and just roll with it. But yeah, I like Tariq Black. I think that would be a good pickup, especially because he would have 2 years of eligibility. It wouldn't just be 1 year. And he's obviously a talented guy. Like, he was pretty highly recruited out of high school, ended up at Michigan, hasn't gone as planned. And, you know, he has 2 years, so it's better than just a guy that would get here in the summer, spend a year here, and it feels like he was kind of just here and gone before we could even realize it. So I think that Tariq Black would probably be my favorite choice at this point.
Yeah, same. Well, Gabby, thank you so very much for coming on, man. I know it's been a long day for you, brother. You and your brother, you know, we had your brother on last week, and you guys are always welcome on. Check out Gabby's work at the State of You and also the Storm Surge podcast. You're my boy, Gabby. Thank you so much, man.
I love you, Marsh. Thanks, you guys. Gabby. Appreciate you guys. I'll talk to you guys soon.
All right.
All right. Peace.
All right. I love him. I love Gabby. He's my boy.
Yeah.
I know I said that after every one of our guests, but Gabby's my guy. Gabby's my boy, dude.
Yeah, we got some good people, dude. We really do. Yeah. So, and I don't really want to read too much into this, but I noticed when Rhett Lashley was talking in the press conference that he said that the wide receiver position will sort itself out soon, which makes me think that, you know, we're in the market. I mean, maybe I'm reading too much into that. I mean, what's your thoughts? Is that, I mean, you think he's talking about adding people, or you think he's talking about just depth stuff?
I mean, I think he's talking about adding people. I think I wouldn't be surprised. I actually I have an article coming out tomorrow on the State of the U about Tariq Black and how Miami's interested in him. I guess we can talk about this a little bit. Tariq Black is an interesting guy because there's a very distinguishable and clear pros and cons about Tariq Black. I mean, super talented. When he came into Michigan as a true freshman in 2017, he was starting right off the bat, caught a touchdown against the Gators in his first game. And he has really good size, 6'3", 215, great ability to go get the ball, great at high pointing the football. And we've seen last year, he's only caught two touchdowns during his career at Michigan, but the cons, man, is his injuries have really, slowed him down. I think he just played three games his freshman season. I think he played six games his sophomore year, and then he played all games last year besides the bowl game. The thing is, I really wish we could have just gotten someone like Hazleton or Kobe White from Boston College. The Black does have 2 years left though, which is a plus. But you just don't want to sign him, and God forbid, you know, he gets injured again, and he doesn't end up playing too much for the Hurricanes. That would be the worst case scenario. But like Abby said, he doesn't graduate till May from Michigan, and so he's going to take his time, and he's not rushing into the process. It was reported the other day that Miami is one of the schools that he's been in contact with. The others are ASU, Boston College, I think Syracuse, Virginia, something like that. But I mean, Miami isn't the only school that Black is interested in. But I mean, he has been liking some of the University of Miami tweets. I know that there is Texas is another one of those schools. If I had to put money on it, I say that he ends up at either Texas or Miami. But that's an interesting situation. I know that you've been keeping up with his kind of decision and what's going on with him.
Yeah, from some Twitter interactions with people that are closer to him, it has led me to believe that, you know, he's at least very interested in Miami and likes the sound of himself at Miami. So nothing conclusive enough to for me to like give a scoop on, but you know, I like you said, I think we'll be in the final decision. And, just my gut feeling is unless a better option comes up, I would assume that he's pretty interested when it's time to sign.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask you this, because someone Auburn's starting running back entered the transfer portal today, Jatarvius Whitlow. And with Chaney being injured and with Robert Burns, you know, he has a history of injuries. What do you think about Miami going after a possible portal running back?
It sounds good. I mean, I'm worried about Chaney. Him missing spring. I think it would mostly depend on an evaluation of where Chaney's at, because we're really just looking like the only playable running backs, if Chaney's not ready to go, is Cam Harris, Jalen Knighton, and Robert Burns. We know that Harris is a beast and can handle, for the most part, a starting running back load. I don't know if he can handle the amount of carries that Rhett Lashley will give him, because it's like more than double what he had last year is what SMU's starter had last season. And, you know, Robert Burns and Jalen Knighton are still pretty unproven. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, they're completely unproven, at least at the college level.
Yeah. Yeah. So I wouldn't be opposed to it. I don't know if I had to. Running back isn't a position that I would choose to use that last spot. But if it happened, then I would just trust that the coaching staff knows a little more than I do.
Yeah. No, for sure. No, I was just thinking about that because the running back position is one that I've been a little worrisome about ever since, you know, if you go back to December, our running back room looking ahead to the 2020 season, it looked like it was stacked. I mean, we had, DJ Dallas could probably be coming back. You know, we still have Lorenzo Lingard. We still have Cam Harris adding on Robert Burns, Jalen Knight, and Don Chaney. But now, like you said, we don't know if Cam Harris can carry that load. Don Chaney already out for spring ball. Robert Burns has a history of injuries. And then there's Jalen Knight. I mean, I think Knight is going to be an absolute star for the Hurricanes. But we don't want to, like, put all of our chips, like, just for Knight as a true freshman to come in and be an instant playmaker. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, absolutely. And injury could be huge. I mean, running backs get banged up all the time. Running backs always miss games. You know what I mean? That's some hyperbole there, but it's not uncommon for a running back to have to miss a game here or there because of how many hits they're taking, just the beating they handle from blocking and, you know, carrying the ball 25 times a game. So it's certainly a little worrisome to have three healthy backs on the roster going into spring ball, especially three of them being unproven at the college level. So I'm totally with you. I do love Knight and I love Chaney, and I would love if we didn't have to take it back, because I'd love to see Chaney getting, you know, 10 touches a game and Knight getting 5 to 10 touches a game. I'd love to start him right now and see what we got, and hopefully we have a pretty dynamic duo going forward with those two.
And okay, so I'm a big transfer portal guy. Whenever someone decent with any kind of stats enters the portal, I freak out like a kid on Christmas. Let me just read you this guy from Auburn stats, Whitlow. As a freshman in 2018, he rushed for 787 yards and 6 touchdowns. And then this past year, he rushed for 763 yards and 10 touchdowns. So let me ask you this. Would you rather have go after a guy like Tariq Black, is kind of a question mark, but a receiver or at a position more of need, or would you rather go after a proven running back who has accomplished much more at the collegiate level?
What's his eligibility? Is he a immediate eligible, or would he have to sit out next season?
I'm not sure. I know he's played 2 years, so he may have to sit out a season, but yeah, I'm just reading on
Twitter. For sure. That would probably be the deciding factor to me. I mean, those stats sound amazing. It would be nice if we could redshirt one of Knighton or Chaney. Both are talented enough that it would just be nice to have an extra year of at least one of those two. So if we could bring in this dude and have him split a majority of the load with Cam Harris, Robert Burns playing a lot of snaps, I think he looked pretty good last year. It would be nice to have the flexibility to try to redshirt Chaney and or Knighton, especially with them being able to play in 4 games.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'd be open to it. I think that's a great find, though. But this leads me to another topic. Let's see, we're already at like 40 minutes, so I don't know if we have time to get into this.
Nah, people love us. They love us.
They do. Let's get into it then. All right. So this is something I just thought of. How many position groups now are we thin on depth?
Well, I mean, let's cornerback.
Okay.
There's
counts. We're thin at corner, dude. You're right on.
And obviously now linebacker.
Okay.
Receiver, we're thin when it comes to experience and production.
I'm calling that thin.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I mean, and then running back, we're one hit away from being like in panic mode.
Okay. And there's another position group I'm thinking
of
too.
We got, and then Navon Donaldson is out, the poor big guy.
So how should we change our expectations? We're thin at running back, wide receiver, offensive line, and corner, and linebacker. That's half of the position groups.
Kind of why, and I didn't know Donaldson was going to be out for the spring. That kind of that, and we missed on already so many solid offensive linemen within the transfer portal. Dang it.
Spring. I mean, I'm not trying to dog on the kid for his weight, and I'm not making a joke either. But a 330-pound lineman in an up-tempo offense, like, if any of our linemen needed this spring, it was probably Donaldson.
He's a little bit bigger than 330.
Yeah. What was he 360?
I think he was 363.
Oh, man. And I'm not making a joke about that. Like, yeah.
And that's we're going to be running 80 plays a game.
Yeah. Dude, like, Rhett Lashley even said it in the thing, we're going to try to run 109 every game.
He needed that big guy running around. I mean, I couldn't even keep up if I was on the field, I couldn't keep up if we were running 50 plays a game.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm not trying to criticize him because I
had a heart attack right there on Green Tree.
Yep. especially in the Miami Heat, dude. I'd be sweating after running one play.
It is a living hell in the summertime and in the fall.
Yeah.
No one is comfortable in that heat.
Yeah.
But spring ball, we got 24 days. Definitely gonna get into previewing some of those positions as the weeks and episodes go on. I'm excited about that, man. We brought up some kind of issues today. I mean, obviously, like, great news with Vonte Williams, signing with the Miami Hurricanes. He's someone that I've wanted to stick and be a Cane for a very, very long time. His cousin Lingard, he wanted him to join him with the Gators, but it just didn't happen. I think he's going to be an absolute star for Miami and that defense. I think him and Jalen Harrell are the next great duo at safety for Miami. I mean, that's just me. A lot of people are coming after me. Yo, what about Amari Carter, Keontre Smith? I mean, just because I didn't name those guys doesn't mean I think that they are good players. But, I mean, you got two of maybe the best safeties. Avante Williams is the best safety in the state of Florida for this class and maybe the entire nation. And Jalen Harrell is maybe the second best safety in the state of Florida for the 2020 class. And so you got those two back there after Gervin Hall and Bubba Bolden move on. So,
yeah,
I'm excited, man. But I mean, like we've talked about, there's some there's a few issues that could be really problematic.
Yeah. Yeah, I kind of killed my own excitement.
No. I am really excited, dude. Like, I still can't believe we got him. I can't believe it.
So I'm officially going to take some credit because I called it when we got Ed Reed. I said that he's going to go in there and steal Avante Williams, and everyone poo-hooed me.
Yeah.
You know,
I didn't think we had a shot in hell.
And honestly, I didn't really believe that. I didn't think he was coming either. I'm just patting myself on the back because I like to. And, you know, Williams even said that the Ed Reed signing didn't affect him, and I believe that. I think when it came down to it, it was really Banda that landed that for us.
Yeah, and people aren't giving him, like, credit. Oh, it's all Ed Reed. And I'm not saying that Ed Reed didn't have anything to do with it, but, like, put some credit on Banda's name. I mean, give him credit for, like, hold, like, just like Gabby said, like, I mean, he, like, stayed in contact with Avante throughout those years, even when he was committed to Oregon and thought he was going to Florida. Like,
eighth grade, man. That's a long time.
Yeah.
That's, I mean, yeah, credit to Banda. That's amazing. That's a great recruiting job to stay on a kid for that long. And, I mean, just make it impossible for him to choose a different school. Because, I mean, we're coming off a 6-7 record. His cousin just left us after, I'm sure in Lingard's own mind, it was a really bad experience with our coaches. And, you know, he's telling his cousin that, and Banda developed such a good relationship that he just couldn't say no at the end of the day. So that's credit where credit is due.
When I was watching it, I mean, I was kind of dreading the announcement, and I'm like, oh, we just, like, I gotta, like, because I have some friends that are Gator fans. I know that sounds awful, but and I was just waiting for the Avante Williams going to Florida news to happen, and then I was like, screw it, I'll watch him make the announcement, because Andrew Ivan said last night that he would put it at, not like he would put it more at 50-50 between UM and FSU instead of UF holding a lead. And so I was like, all right, you know, maybe there's a chance. And I a very small chance. And then once he put on the Miami hat, I'm like, okay, like, I'm waiting.
Yeah, I did.
Like, I know it's coming. And then it was happening. I'm like,
I was just waiting for him to take it off and throw it, like, throw it behind the desk and put on the Florida hat.
I was so certain that it was happening, and it just didn't happen. Like, he's a Miami Hurricane. Like,
yeah.
We literally have the best safety in the entire country, along with the second or third best. I mean, along with another one of the best safeties in the entire country in that recruiting class. Like, how did we pull this off?
I don't know, man. I'm back on the Manny train. I really am.
I am too, man. Like, well, I'm on the off-season Manny train.
I'm just back on it.
I'm all aboard the train, bro. Like, choo-choo. Let's 9-3, 10-2. Like, and then 2021, I mean, we're back.
If he has another unsuccessful season, my mind will be blown, because
I will have to enter, like, therapy or real medical help. If we have another season where we win 6 or 7 games, even 8 games, then I will have to, like, check myself into, like, the cuckoo hut. Like,
yeah.
I will lose my mind. Like, you can, like, there are no excuses now. Like, and yeah. I mean, he's kind of done it upon himself, like, making all these moves, but, like.
Well, that's the thing, though, is how can you do everything right on paper and fail twice? And, you know, last offseason, he did everything right, and it failed. And then he was smart enough to realize, wait a minute, I made all the right moves with people who hadn't actually produced. It was just the idea of them, and most of them failed. You know, that left tackle from Butler, he failed. Well, guess what? He hadn't produced at a high level. You know, I'm not out on Tate yet, but the Tate experiment for last season was a failure. And Tate hadn't produced at a high level yet. And Dan Enos, you know, he was a failure. And, you know, he had one good season at Arkansas, but for most of his career, like, he wasn't well-loved by any of the people that he was – around and coached with. And so Manny was able to learn from that, even though he did all the right things on paper. Still, he learned from that, and he went out and he got people with elite production. He got one of the few quarterbacks in college football history that has accounted for 50 touchdowns by themselves. He got the number one rated returning pass rusher from Pro Football Focus, and what was he, like, third in sacks last year or something like that? Or third returning,
fifth in sacks, but he had the second most sacks for a DN that is returning this year in college football. And Gregory Rousseau is number one.
Okay, so but elite production, you know. And then he goes and gets Rhett Lashley, who posted fifth or seventh. I've forgotten, but a top 10 offense. That's elite production. And so I mean, again, he's made all the right moves, but this time it's backed up by elite factual production that you can touch.
We could have this podcast every single day, and I could just talk for hours about the Canes. Like, I love talking about them. Especially on days like today where it just feels good. Like, I've never seen – I mean, because, like, I just started following recruiting, like – like, this was the first year that, like, I was really into it. I wasn't around for the old – some of these old horror stories that I've been told. But, like – and I've only seen, like, people troll Miami. I've never seen the other way around. And just to see, like, a top player like Avonte do that, like, troll the Gators so hard and come to Miami, like – I've literally been smiling all day. I'm just happy.
Me too. I mean, I had to call you when I was driving around for work. Just you know, I needed the podcast vibes. You know what I mean? I needed an outlet for my fervor. Oh man, I'm still pumped. This is a good day.
Absolutely. Do you want to talk about that that Vegas guy that we offered?
The Polynesian tackle?
Yes.
You've been on that train for a long time.
I don't know how to pronounce his name.
I don't either. let me look it up.
I have no idea how to, yeah, there's, he's an offensive tackle, 2021. We're going to find his name. Or at least so that we can at least attempt to pronounce it. But 2021 offensive tackle out of Desert Pines in Las Vegas. He was offered by the Canes, I think it was 4 or 5 days ago. Same high school as Darnell Washington. And you were the first person that told me about it. I think it was like Friday or Saturday that you tweeted me. And I was so happy when I saw that because I have been trying to get Miami to get a Polynesian, a Tongan to come play for the Hurricanes for so long because you and I, we live in Utah. We went to high school in Utah. I mean, I played high school football with, you know, Polynesians. I know that they're a special kind of people that need to come to Coral Gables and especially an offensive lineman when, I mean, those guys are the strongest humans on earth. I mean, nobody, like, if you have never played against a Polynesian, they will hit you harder than you've ever been hit in your entire life. I don't care, you know, Ray Lewis, John Lynch, I don't care. Nothing compares to when a Polynesian hit. They will destroy you. And then, but then they'll pick you right up and say, hey, good play. They're just the greatest people. And I've been campaigning for us to start recruiting out west and get into the Polynesian players. I mean, because Oregon has an offensive lineman. I don't have his name in front of me. He's from St. George, Utah. Polynesian. He's going to be a top 5, top 10 draft pick next year.
Yeah. And I mean, it's pretty well circulated that South Florida is amazing for a lot of positions, but offensive lineman isn't really one of them. And you know, look at your hometown Utes. I mean, they've last few years they have dominated the trenches, and you know, it's been recruiting some of the local Polynesian kids that have been so effective. You know, and there's a lot of guys out of, you know, in the NFL that have come out of Utah, even that are Polynesian, like Star Lutulele. I don't know how to say his name. You know, Haloti Ngata and, you know, guys like that. It's,
I mean, freaking LSU. They had two true freshmen this past year on their national championship team on the defensive line from my alma mater, from East High School. Two big Polynesians that contributed to those trenches down low. I mean, If those schools are going out to Utah and then, you know, the West Coast and getting those big boys, I mean, Miami needs to as well. And, you know, props to Garen Justice He has those West Coast connections, and I want to just like shoot him a message. I'm like, hey man, like keep doing it. But okay, yeah. This guy's name, I am going to pronounce it as best as I can. Tia Oli Savia. That is, I completely butchered that, but yeah, 4-star offensive tackle. He's in the 2021 class, 19th ranked offensive tackle in that class, 2nd ranked offensive lineman in the state of Nevada, 6'5", 250. The dude has offers. Miami just offered him last week, but he has offers from the Gators. He has offers from LSU, from Michigan, Nebraska, Oregon, Penn State, Tennessee, USC, Utah, West Virginia. I mean, the dude has plenty of offers, but Miami has an edge where we have 3 Las Vegas kids on the Hurricanes right now: Tate Martell, Bubba Bolden, and Brevin Jordan. So I would love to see the Canes pursue this kid a little bit more. Maybe, you know, Canes fans can work their magic on Twitter like they have been with other recruits that we want to see get in.
Marsh, I've been digging through our offers on 247. There's an offer out to a kid in our backyard in Orem, Utah, Kingsley Suamataya.
Saw dude. That.
Yeah, he's he has 30 offers from Georgia, Oregon, Bama, and more. So probably not gonna get him, but
yeah, you know, from what I've read, he looks like he's gonna go to Oregon. But this Savea kid, I mean, let's get him, man. Let's go after him. We know that, and it's not just on the football field. I mean, Polynesians are just some of the greatest people on earth, and I think they would just be a great addition to the University of Miami.
I mean, the Rock is half Polynesian, you know.
He's Samoan.
One of our greats. So
absolutely. I mean,
we need to start the movement, man. I mean, I guess that's I don't have any cultural heritage there, but you know, it's bottom line is we just need to start dominating the trenches, especially on the offensive side of the ball.
Oh, absolutely. And
we just haven't been doing that, so we need to rethink our strategy, you know.
Absolutely. Is there anything else that we need to cover today?
I think we're good, man.
Hey, I know that we recorded yesterday, and it's been a long day, but appreciate you and appreciate Gabby also for coming on. That was a great interview. Really enjoyed talking to him. And thank you everyone for the support, and it's just been fun, man. And today is one of those days where I'm grateful for the Miami Hurricanes. I'm grateful for Canes fans and their support, and just the bond, even if it's just over social media, just the connection that Canes fans have. And it's awesome, man. It's awesome.
Yeah, it is. I can't say anything but to agree with you. You know, it's crazy that just in such a short time I feel like I've made friends, you know, like legit people that I want to hang out with. And you know, I'm so excited for fall to have, you know, the chance to go to tailgates and link up with people. And it's just been a really cool experience. So.
Absolutely. Oh, one last note before we sign off. The UAB game changed from Saturday, September 19th to Thursday, September 17th. So
yeah, that gives us a 9-day prep period for Michigan State. So that's why that's significant, is because we kind of have a week and a half now.
Yep. Absolutely. So yeah, another great episode, man. And we'll catch you guys next week, I guess.
Yeah. Monday or Tuesday. See you then.
All right, go Canes.
Go Canes.
This has been the Forza Podcast. Remember to like and leave a comment to help our podcast grow.